Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. It's a little over 2 months since the World Health Organization effectively declared COVID-19 a global pandemic. Many cities around the world are still under lockdown restrictions as many others begin to gradually reopen their economies. As health experts around the world struggle to find a vaccine and cure for COVID-19, the World Health Organization says that there are some positive signs that some treatments appear to be working in as far as limiting the severity or length of the COVID-19 disease. WHO says that it is now focusing on learning more about 4 or 5 of the most promising ones and hopefully make them available to everyone who needs them. In towns and cities across Africa, authorities have lifted coronavirus restrictions as life is slowly returning to normal. However, health experts warn that in some of the countries where lockdowns have been lifted, there have been jumps in coronavirus cases, which according to the WHO head Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus underscore the challenges that may lie ahead. The World Health Organization cautions that before any country begins to lift restrictions, it should have necessary testing, tracing, and isolating infrastructure in place. In South Africa, the country with the most COVID-19 cases on the continent, officials say that lockdown measures have made a difference in transmission. However, as Anita Power reports, critics are calling for lockdowns to be lifted more quickly, saying that these restrictions are now themselves a burden on a population which has long struggled with inequality, poverty, and unemployment.
To say South Africa is tired of the lockdown would be a gross understatement. Officials acknowledge the effect that a curfew and limitations on movement are having on the population's financial and mental health, but say they are holding firm against a bigger health threat, that of a virus that has killed 3.2% of those known to be infected in the World Health Organization's African region. The global death rate is about 7%, according to WHO statistics. The head of the opposition Democratic Alliance, John Steenhuisen, threw these provocative words at the ruling African National Congress.
We're no longer dealing with a COVID-19 crisis. We are dealing with a lockdown crisis, an ANC lockdown crisis, to be precise. Let me be very clear. There is no longer a justification to keep this hard lockdown in place. Government cannot even produce the justification. They cannot show us the modeling they use to decide when to ease and when to tighten restrictions. They cannot do this because they don't seem to know for sure themselves.
The initial 5-week hard lockdown, which has now been replaced by slightly loosened restrictions, was aimed at buying the health system time to prepare for an inevitable wave of infections. Critics argue that that time is up and that the harm done to livelihoods outweighs the risks faced by easing the restrictions. Most of the country is currently under what is known as Phase 4 of the eased lockdown, with a nighttime curfew and reduced shopping hours in place. The sale of alcohol and cigarettes remains illegal. Although several key sectors of the economy have gone back to work, many South Africans remain at home, unable to do so. Shabir Mahdi, professor of vaccinology at the University of the Witwatersrand, urged more targeted testing and screening, and huge improvements to water and sanitation. The lockdowns, he said, aren't enough.
And if we can't do that, unfortunately, what we're setting up ourselves for, irrespective of what policy government has, right? If we're not able to abide by those sort of conditions, if we can't create an environment for people to actually practice those sort of interventions, we're going to have a much quicker rate of transmission of the virus, and we're going to get a surge much sooner, and the peak with this wave probably will be much greater than we expect if those non-pharmaceutical interventions don't work.
At this time, the government is holding firm in its positions. Over the weekend, Health Minister Zweli Mkhize noted an alarming rise in new infections in the Western Cape and threatened that the nation may see a return to a total lockdown or heightened interventions of various forms in some areas where transmission is high. Steenhuisen opposes that.
The real tragedy playing out here is no longer the coronavirus, but the lockdown itself, because this lockdown is going to cost many more lives than it can possibly save.
President Cyril Ramaphosa has yet to say publicly when the restrictions might end. But in his Monday newsletter, the president said the nation was stepping up its testing, screening, and treatment regime. He noted the transition to the next phase of the coronavirus response, that of recovery, will be more difficult than the present one. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
From South Africa, let's go to Nigeria, Africa's most populous nation, also a country with the largest economy on the continent. As businesses reopen across the country, workers are adjusting to the new reality created by the COVID-19 pandemic, including shorter work hours, pay cuts, and higher unemployment. Nigerian authorities expect that the jobless rate this year will hit 1 in 3, while the International Monetary Fund says that the economy will shrink by 3.4%. So how are Nigerians coping with this? For more on this, Timothy Obiezu reports.
27-year-old Emmanuel Nobu searches his phone, hoping for a response from one of the many places he has recently approached for a job. He says it's not been easy for him since he was laid off from his bartending job at an Abuja nightclub in March following Nigeria's coronavirus lockdown.
You can imagine in a situation where you stay and you don't have any source of income, it's very difficult to bear. Being at home all through, nowhere to go, you just sleep, wake up, walk around, nothing to do, no engagement.
Nigerian authorities last week began easing a nationwide lockdown, but maintained restrictions on schools, religious bodies, and businesses like nightclubs, bars, and gardens where crowds usually gather. Millions of Nigerians, such as Emmanuel, whose livelihoods depend on these businesses and institutions, are having a hard time meeting their basic needs.
It even got to the extent that I wasn't able to get a recharge card to load in my phone. I can't make contact. It's just like most movies we watch, you see most people hopeless in the movie.
Nigeria has been battling high unemployment for many years. However, job losses triggered by the coronavirus pandemic is something new. Nigeria's labor officials predict the unemployment rate may hit 33% by the end of this year. The country director of the International Labour Organization, Dennis Zulu, says the coronavirus pandemic took a bad situation and made it even worse.
Over the past few years, we've been seeing an increase in the number of Nigerians who are unemployed. And also because of new and young Nigerians entering the labour market who are not able to find jobs, this has further exacerbated the situation. So now, coupled with the COVID-19 pandemic, the situation is of very serious concern, and it could get worse depending on how this pandemic evolves.
Businesses are reopening across Nigeria, but they are applying measures like shorter operating hours and pay cuts in order to survive this age of the coronavirus. Zulu says it could take them a while to stabilize.
We should not be oblivious to the fact that some of them are still struggling now because the weeks of shutdown really affected their ability to generate working capital, which they then use for their own business operations.
The International Monetary Fund, IMF, says Nigeria's oil-dependent economy will shrink by more than 3% this year because of the falling global oil prices triggered by the coronavirus lockdowns. That is not good news for Emmanuel Nobu. He plans to keep looking for work. But unless something dramatic happens, his job search may go on for months to come. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
According to the latest information, there are now a little over 66,000 COVID-19 cases in Africa, with around 2,300 deaths and 23,000 recoveries. Even though the coronavirus was declared a global pandemic in March of this year, there are a few countries that have yet to record any cases of the deadly virus. And one of those countries is Lesotho, geographically surrounded by South Africa, the country with the most COVID cases on the continent. Lesotho has yet to register a single case of COVID-19. The country's embattled Prime Minister Thomas Tabane announced this week that his government will begin easing lockdown restrictions to allow non-essential businesses to start operating for limited hours during the daytime. But how do we explain that the country has no cases so far? For that, I reached Dineo Sengwete, a local journalist and writer based in Lesotho's capital, Maseru.
Okay, Dineo Sengwete, good to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jackson.
Can you bring us up to speed? What is happening in Lesotho? Are you out of lockdown? What is the status of COVID cases in your country?
We're out of lockdown, yay. Well, we are in a sort of weird limbo where we're mostly back to normal, but under new rules. But I think that's the way things are going to be for the rest of the world moving on from now. So far, we have tested around 200 people, 219, with 180 tests done in this previous week. We still have zero cases, except there was a story that broke today that says that a couple has been identified that is showing, it's rather mysterious because the husband is tested positive, but the wife has tested negative twice. So now people don't understand how this is happening. The Minister of Health has demanded that this something be followed up, either the transportation be tested, but something needs to give. But besides that one case, we still have nothing.
That's a little bit of a medical mystery that you've had somebody who was interacting with people in Lesotho, travels to South Africa, he's tested, yeah, he has COVID, but then you've done contact tracing back in Lesotho and there's no single case.
Still not a case. What
is the secret? Maybe you should tell us, but what's the secret? Why is it that you're still the only country still standing right now that doesn't have any COVID cases?
I mean, it might have something to do with our indigenous practices, because much like Madagascar, we also use wormwood and all these other things. People have always had remedies for treating what they consider to be severe flu. So maybe symptoms have been showing around the country and people have just thought, oh, maybe I have ntaramane, as it's called here, and then just do what they usually do and then it works. That's one assumption. Another assumption is that there are people who are dying of COVID, but because of poor testing equipment, we can't really confirm for sure. But then people should be dropping at a higher rate. I mean, the rate of death is as normal as it's always been, if not lower, because there are fewer car accidents right now.
Fewer people driving
on the streets. Yes,
I get it.
Yeah. And people can't get drunk. Well, for the most part.
Right.
It's a great big mystery as to how this is possible. There were testing kits that have been sent. Some were found faulty. Some have disappeared. But that's another story.
Who sent you the testing kits?
Saint Jackma. But you know, the way things run in Africa sometimes, testing kits went missing, equipment went missing, people started selling it on the black market, then new cargo was sent.
Why would anybody steal testing kits, COVID testing kits? It doesn't make sense at all. What is that?
For the same reason people steal AIDS medication.
There's a black market for testing kits in Maseru somewhere. People just chilling. It's like, do you have ntaramane, whatever that and then they will test you.
That's a good question, right? I wish I knew, but gloves have gone missing. PPEs have gone missing. It's a mystery.
So how long were you under lockdown? Because
we were
the COVID you had a COVID lockdown and then you were under state of emergency. How long were you in COVID lockdown?
34 days. Yeah.
Wow.
And we had two states of emergencies in that period. the third time the Prime Minister proposed to have a six-month state of emergency, but apparently Parliament rejected that proposal. But
that would work really well for him, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it, right?
So tell us about the drama that is playing out politically in Lesotho right now. It sounds like some sort of political movie. Is it like a Mexican telenovela?
Game of Thrones.
Give us a little background.
Okay, so I'll try to keep it brief. In January, news breaks that the First Lady of Lesotho, who is the Prime Minister's wife, was involved in the murder of the Prime Minister's ex-wife because she was a rival who was blocking their marriage by refusing to grant the Prime Minister a divorce. Anyway, so this news breaks, then she disappears, comes back after about a week, is arrested and charged, and then has her day in court, and she pleads not guilty. Then she is granted R1,000 bail. R1,000 bail is, man, it's less than $100. Anyway, there were stories about corruption having taken place in her release from prison, but that's neither here nor there because she's out of prison right now. Then the Prime Minister himself was charged, but
he was implicated as having been an accomplice in this matter.
An accomplice, right. Yes. He wasn't formally charged because his attorneys argued that he should not be charged because he's a sitting premier. And that was rejected. It's still being debated. We don't really know where that is. Fast forward, then pressure starts coming from within the party, the ABC party, that, hey, since our leader is a suspect in a murder, he should probably not sit as a prime minister. Then the National Executive Council comes up with a new proposed cabinet and a new proposed prime minister who should sit. They decide that they are going to form a coalition with the leading opposition party, but they couldn't because they didn't have enough seats to overthrow the current government. Then yesterday, in a twist of note, the Prime Minister's signature is seen on the list of signatures who want to form another new government. So this other new government involves some members of the old ruling coalition, the four parties that were ruling,
right,
and some few more. But it suggests that the Prime Minister is agreeing to step down. This time he has said he will step down by the 22nd of May,
He wants to step down, but then form a new political party and maybe use that as a vehicle to get back into power.
To stay in power. So if... Yeah, theoretically what happens is...
He can create a political coalition and it supports him, then he'll be able to find a way to stay in power.
I think the way it works is that after the 22nd, he'll no longer be a prime minister, but he will be a member of parliament somehow or something, right? And this will still allow him to be entitled to certain benefits that were due to him, I suppose, and might even buy him time as far as the murder charges are concerned. Because initially he had said he would step down on the 31st of July, but people were saying that's too late. We need you gone like now. And then he said the 29th of May, and then yesterday he said the 22nd. So all we know is that someone is trying to buy time for something that we don't know.
He's not in a hurry.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganya. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of our conversation with Dinelle Sengwete from Maseru in Lesotho.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Ah. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. In Botswana, sex workers, most of them migrants, received food donations from charities earlier this week after reports that the majority were facing starvation due to the coronavirus lockdown. A sex workers organization behind the initiative says that it aims to help at least 800 migrant sex workers during the lockdown, especially those who are HIV positive or who have young children. Mukodisi Dube reports from the capital, Habarone.
More than 800 sex workers across Botswana will benefit from food hampers donated by non-governmental organizations this week. Two NGOs working with sex workers organization Sisonke are assisting with the handouts. Sex workers who are HIV positive and those with young children will be prioritized. Program manager Mandla Bule says the project aims to help migrant sex workers who do not have access to the government's coronavirus relief aid.
Our priority groups are sex workers, especially non-citizen sex workers, because under the Botswana social relief for COVID-19, only citizens are supported with food parcels. So we saw it fit that we target sex workers who are firstly HIV positive, to those with children, and who are foreigners.
Authorities in Botswana imposed a nationwide lockdown in March to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The country has recorded 24 cases of the virus and one death. Bule said restrictions in movement due to the lockdown have meant sex workers cannot meet their clients.
Sex workers are mostly affected because right now their work is mostly dependent on the movement of people. So under lockdown, there's no people, nobody's allowed to go anywhere. So in turn, they have lost on income.
Sex work remains illegal in Botswana, but an estimated 7,000 locals and migrants are involved in the trade. Botswana has begun easing its lockdown restrictions, and full activities are expected to resume after May 21st. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Haboroni.
You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We continue our conversation with Dineo Sengwete in Maseru, the capital of Lesotho. The country has yet to record a single case of COVID-19. But as the country begins to slowly reopen some parts of its economy, it is still grappling with a political crisis which started after the country's first lady and her husband, the prime minister, were implicated in the death of the former first lady. Dineo Sengwete explains.
How do you think this political drama is actually affecting the fight against COVID in your country? You don't have it, but if eventually you do have, do you feel that it is taking away resources or attention? There's a lot of political drama playing out and that the attention has not been focused on the serious issue of fighting COVID.
I mean, Jackson, jokes aside, right, we should be testing people. There should be mass testing happening. They said they're starting it in the southern region districts. So three districts in the north, actually. In this 34 days plus that we've been in lockdown, there's only 2 million people in this country. We should have at least tested by now at least 100,000, you know. That didn't happen. People are starving. They need food parcels to get to them. What we've seen is that it's mostly the private sector and people of goodwill that are donating to people that are needy and that cannot work under the circumstances. Factory workers who have been fighting for their rights for the longest time were promised a stimulus package of 800 rand. Apparently, they only received 350 rand. So we look good on paper as countries, one of the countries that are responding well to corona, especially because we don't have cases yet. So on paper, we're saying we have policies in place. We even have infrastructure in place to some extent. And there have been promises about training people, equipping people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we are here. We don't see this happening. There's still people on the streets without masks. There's still people in and out of public transport without sanitizers. Like, you don't really hear proper messaging coming from our leaders in terms of how we should be acting and how we should be proactive and how we should take care of each other. All we hear about is, hey, there's a new party. Hey, no, maybe not a new party. Maybe, like, so there are more serious things to be concerned about.
You feel like you should have been using this time when you don't have any cases to prepare.
Exactly.
Yes, you do have cases, including instituting measures like social distancing and...
Exactly.
How are the curfew? Are people respecting the curfew hours?
Yes, because we are afraid of the police. there have been a few hooligans here and there who, of course, met their demise. But people are off the streets. People are abiding by the law. But because also we're scared. Like, it's like, okay, we don't have corona. We don't know what corona is. But what if it does come? We hear about how many people it's killing out there. And we're a small country. And all we need is one case. Really, for things to go really bad.
Mm. How much of your economy is still functional? Did you have to shut off segments of the economy to be able to, in response to?
Okay, let me put it pandemic? This way. First of all, schools are at a halt, or were at a halt for the last month and a half because schools were shut down before lockdown, right? Our biggest employer is the government. A lot of the government offices and departments were closed due to COVID, right? But people got paid. Some had reduced salaries, or that was just a rumor, who knows. Then you have majority of people who live by hustling. They have to leave their homes to go sell, to go link up with whatever. They have to be on the streets to be making money. So that... And we're talking about small to medium enterprises that are a huge part of our economy. So
that have been
because we have poor telecommunications infrastructure, so people couldn't sell stuff online. People couldn't really move around because of the restrictions on the road and being afraid of law enforcement. So it has suffered. Mm-hmm. We're yet to see the figures, see the stats properly, but it's not looking great.
Which of the two storylines is more in the news, the political drama or COVID?
Right now, it's the political drama. It's the political, because like after lockdown,
it was like, is there like fear, you know, when there's political drama playing out in other parts of Africa, because of the role of the military, usually people are scared. Now you're talking about seeing soldiers on the street with all these different guns, but I don't get the sense that you're really worried that you're gonna get shot.
No, our situation is funny. Really, it's just laughable at this stage, you know, because you see the first lady on social media in a big yellow wig.
I saw
singing.
That.
Yeah, and this is on social media, meaning the world can see it now.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. We want to thank our guest, Dineo Sengwete, and all our reporters across the continent. For more coverage on how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting the African continent, check out our reports at voanews.com. You can also connect with me. I'm at Upfront Africa. Wishing you good health and blessings. Goodbye.
This is